Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the doctrine of parens patriae, or the parent-child relationship, when we come back. Well, the lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of my 2-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school. The school includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you're served with a summons, a citation, or a complaint. And rule number 1 is you don't say anything. You keep your mouth shut, and then you shut up. And you know, if you can learn rule 1, you can win about 90% of your legal cases. The most important rule there is shut up. And that's because all of the evidence that's ever going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you. Now, government is fully capable of making their own case against you without any help from you whatsoever. So don't give the prosecution a victory. At least make them work for it. Listen to what the courts have to say about keeping quiet in the face of police interrogation and, indeed, in many cases, police intimidation. One court put it this way. They said, who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights? Now, that's a judge's opinion in U.S. versus Dickerson. In a second case, you can and must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment. That comes from Belknap versus United States, another judge giving you some information or some advice. Here's a third judge. He said the constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent, as well as the innocent and the farsighted. And he said that in Marchetti versus United States. Three judges in three cases giving us sound Fifth Amendment advice. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call the law school at area code 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure is a school on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we're up to Randy's case. Now, we've been talking about parens patriae. It's a Latin term for the parent-child relationship. Now, parents and children have a relationship protected by law. Many of the old common law rules regarding property and property rights over children and parents and the relationship between the two have been overturned, overthrown, abandoned, and statutized out of existence. I can't change what's been done. I could sit here and tell you that it's a mistake, and I could sit here and cry and lament about how we've made these terrible mistakes because we have abandoned the law of God, and we should go back to, you know, but what's done's done. And now, like a game of chess, we have to play the game without our queen and two rooks. That's what we've lost so far, queen and two rooks. The game's still on. Maybe we win, maybe we lose. We're now at a disadvantage. But that disadvantage doesn't have to mean, necessarily, that you can't win or that you can't play in the game. It means that from now on, we've got to play a stricter, closer, more intelligent game. We don't have the luxury of playing the fool any longer. Now, I've said to many of my students, as they come in the door talking about child custody, I've said, I don't care whose side I'm on. I can be on the father's side or the mother's side, and I know how to play the game. I can't always win. For instance, if you've got a mother who has custody of a child, and that mother can play the game by the 12 rules that the courts play the game by, you cannot take that child away from that mother, come hell or high water. I don't care what you do. You're not going to win. On the other hand, I don't care whether it's a mother or a father. If you can find that mother or father in control or custody of a child who's in violation of those rules, and if you can come into court and prove it, I can show you how to take that child away from that parent who is in violation of those rules, in violation of the state standards for custody of children. It's not because I'm so smart or because I'm a genius. It's just that I know the rules and I know how to play the game. That's all there is to it. It's like playing a game of Monopoly. You know, I know how to play the game of Monopoly pretty well. I won't win every time, but I'll win my share. And I'm not complaining about the rules of Monopoly. I didn't make the rules of Monopoly. But I know what the rules are, and I know how to play the game by the rules, and I can teach you how to play that game by those rules. And more likely, I've said this before, and I'll say it again, more than likely I can win about 90% of my cases, unless, of course, the other side has an ironclad case and you just can't penetrate their armor. If that's the case, I can tell you up front, you can save your time, effort, and energy. Don't waste your time here. You cannot win in this game. On the other hand, if you can win, I'll tell you, hey, you can win this case. And here's the way to win it. And after all, that's the way lawyers play the game. I mean, if you're playing on a level playing field and all things being equal. Now, there was a student that I had here by the name of Randy. And Randy came to school here, and he had a wife and a small boy. Lived up in Michigan. I believe it was Jackson County, Michigan, as I recall. No, it's St. Joseph County, Department of Social Services. It wasn't Jackson. It was St. Joseph County. And the address, just to show you that we know what we're talking about, is 615 East Main Street, P.O. Box 159, Centerville, Michigan, 49032. And here's the letter from the state of Michigan. Listen to this letter. What if you received a letter like this from Social Lady? It begins, Mr. and Mrs. Randall, and it says, Mr. and Mrs., this is to inform you that there has been a complaint filed with the Children's Protective Services stating that your son Robert is not attending school because you have not enrolled him and you do not choose to have him attend. Now, I contacted the Sturgis Public Schools and found that Robert was not enrolled and that you had not contacted, or that rather you had been contacted about this matter. Now, I am told that you reported that Robert is enrolled in another school, but that you refused to state what that school was. Now, please be informed that Michigan law requires that children 6 years and older must receive an education in an accredited program. It is your right to select the program, but it must meet the requirements of the law. Now, if you refuse to comply with the law, you may be subject to prosecution or to charges of child neglect. I attempted recently to visit you at your home to discuss this matter, but found no one at home. Now, please contact me by phone or letter to let me know if the above information is incorrect and to verify your son's attendance in an approved program. If you have questions about your legal responsibilities or your choices, I would be happy to discuss these with you. Now, please contact the Children's Protective Services Unit at 467-6311 by Friday, October the 24th, to verify Robert's attendance or to set up an appointment to discuss the matter. If we do not hear from you by that date, we will initiate legal action. Sincerely, Sherry Salmonson, Children's Protective Services, St. Joseph County, Department of Social Services. Sherry Salmonson. Here's Social Lady writing a letter to Randall and his wife and saying, hey, your kid's not enrolled in the local public school. And I came to talk to you about it, and I didn't find anybody at home. And you may rest assured that we will initiate legal action if we don't hear from you. I mean, this is a letter right out of Dante's Inferno. This just sends chills up Sally Housewife and Joe Sixpack's spine. All right, so you should be aware that the law requires that all children, as far as I know, in every state in the union, must receive an education. That's not surprising because God Almighty himself from Moses at Mount Sinai required that all children receive an education. It's a common law rule as well as a civil law rule. Whether you like it or not, your child must be educated. Now, you do not have to educate your child to the Ten Commandments. You may educate your child to the Ten Planks, to the Communist Manifesto. You don't have to educate your child in public school. You can educate your child in a private school. So I'm going to show you education here. So let me flip over to education, which is section 18. And remember, when we started our program here, we're looking at American Jurisprudence, second edition, volume 59. And I'm on section 18, Control of Education. Now, on the subject matter of control of education, I'm going to read 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then I can read 16 and 5, that's 21, and then I've got 21, 18, 19, 20, okay, that's 20 plus 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 25, and then I'm just counting the number of cases here. Now, just be patient with me. I'm old and a doddering old fart, but let's listen. 1, 2 through 8, 25 and 8, that's 33. All right, here's 33 cases. There's 23 cases on the subject matter of control of education in Section 18 and Section 19, by whom exercised. 33 cases. And you'll find that, by the way, on pages 101, 102. It's page 100, 101, and 102. Three pages. All right. Now let's start over here on section 18, and let me tell you that except as modified by statute, the general rule is that a parent has the right to control the education of his child. However, the right is subordinate to the police power of the state and may be restricted and regulated by municipal law providing minimum educational standards. On the other hand, although some authorities have gone as far as to say that the business of educating children belongs primarily to the public, and the parents are ordinarily entrusted with it only because it can seldom be put into better hands, it is clear that the state's power in this area is not unlimited. Get this. It is clear that the state's power in this area is not unlimited. In other words, there's a limit on the state's power. There's a limit here on Social Lady compelling you to educate your child in public school. 33 cases that tell you, okay, here's where the lines are drawn in the sand, here's what the law requires, and here's where many parents make a mistake. They get it in their head that I'm not going to do this. They don't know where the lines are drawn in the sand, they don't know what the rules are, but they say, I'm not going to do this. Now, Social Lady, who is a legal creature, she knows where the lines are drawn in the sand, and so she makes demands upon you that may actually exceed her powers. But then, how do you know? You don't know what her powers are. So when she makes demands upon you that exceeds her powers, you haven't got a clue as to whether or not she's within the power of the state or whether she's exceeded it. Then, she proceeds against you knowing the law. She knows what she can do and how to do it. You do not know what to do or how to defend against it. It's like playing a game in which you don't know the rules, but she does. So Social Lady knows the rules of the game and you don't know. She knows what her powers are, but you don't know what your powers are. And she's got the clear advantage over you. Now, your only alternative is to hire a lawyer, pay him $5,000 plus expenses, and like as not, he's working for the state. After all, he's licensed by the same government, the same state, that is prosecuting you. That doesn't seem very intelligent now to me, does it to you? Do you expect to get a fair trial being represented by an officer of the court that is licensed by the very opponent, the state of Michigan, licenses your attorney and hires and pays the judge and hires and pays social lady, and you think you're going to get a fair trial in here? I mean, if you believe that, I got a bridge to sell in Brooklyn. Now, in the case of Randy here, Randy came up with a very, very amenable outcome. I mean, he won the case. He never went to trial. He never went to court. But I want to show you here that, you know, if you're just of average intelligence, and you don't have to be a lawyer, I mean, you can read these laws, you can read these cases, you can read this encyclopedia just like I can. I just told you, let me tell you again, except as modified by statute, the general rule is that a parent has the right to control the education of his child. You have the right, and there's three places for you to educate your child: public school, private school, and homeschool. You have the right to choose. Now, in the case of Randy here, he chose homeschool. He's educating his child at home. And he told the Sturgis schools, he said, Robert is enrolled in another school, but I'm not going to tell you what school that is. Okay. Now, he could have gone a step further and said, I've elected to educate my child at home. He's going to homeschool. Now, in some states, the state has rules and regulations for homeschool. Let me tell you what it is here in Missouri. It's a fairly liberal state. Here in Missouri, I don't have to tell anybody that I'm going to homeschool my child. In some states, you have to notify the local school board, like Pennsylvania, for instance. Here in my state, I don't have to do that. Now, if the state finds out that I'm educating my child at home, which is up to them, I don't have to tell them jack squat. But let's assume that they find out for one reason or another. They can send me a letter and say, okay, Mr. Gordon, you're educating your daughter at home, and we know that. We found out. Somebody told us, or we've got that information. Now, you send your child over here to the Lutie School and let us test her. And after we administer this test, we will decide from that test whether or not she's operating at grade level for her age. So if you've got an 11-year-old girl, she has to be able to pass a 6th grade test. If she's 12, 7th grade, and so on up the line. All right? So they did that. They sent a letter, and they said, well, now you've got to let us test your kid. So I took a look at the state statute, and lo and behold, our legislature said, George Gordon, if the Lutie School says you send your kid over here to be tested, you have to do that. So I looked at that, and I said, well, that's what the law requires. So I got to do that. Now remember, this child belongs to the state. We gave her to the state. Actually, we didn't, but the child's mother gave her to the state. The child has a birth certificate. This child belongs to the state, and we know whose kid this is. I'm just the babysitter, and I said, okay. But this babysitter does have certain rights. I can select her education. I'm doing that. It's homeschool. Now, the school says, we want to test her. I look in the state statutes, it says, yep, that's what the law requires. I send her over, she passes the test. Now, boys and girls, if you're educating your child at home and your child cannot pass the state standards, which are the lowest in the industry, I mean, the state, and I'm talking about every state in the United States, the state standards of education are so low that your child has to be stupid or you ain't trying for your kid to flunk a state test. That's how bad it is in public school. Our kid not only passed the test, she passed the test at the grade 12.6 level. That is, she was 6 months into the 12th grade. She was equal to and superior to a high school senior when she was 10, 11, 12 years old. I forgot exactly how old she was when she went over there. I think 12 years old, 7th grade, 11, maybe 6th grade. when she was in the seventh grade, for crying out loud. She could pass a test and score higher than the average high school senior after graduation in the state of Missouri. Now, I'm not sitting here bragging that my kid's smarter than 12th graders. I'm sitting here saying the damn public school system is so poor and the children who go through it are so damn dumb that if you educate your child to just the average standards, they'll score at the 86th percentile. That's where our child was scoring. Now, with that understanding out of the way, let's go on to the Fry case. Now, Fry is up in Michigan. Michigan is a little tougher state. So, Randy here writes a letter back to Sherry Salmonson. And I want you to write these dates down. Mrs. Salmonson's letter comes on October the 20th. It's dated October 20. And then Randy writes a letter to her, and let's see what the date is on the letter that he wrote to her. October the 23rd. 3 days after he received her letter, he wrote her a letter. 3 days later. And in his letter, I won't read that to you, but in his letter, it's a little on the long side. He said, I don't have a marriage license, and my child doesn't have a birth certificate, and my child is being educated at home pursuant to our religious beliefs as Hebrews under the First Amendment. Okay. So October the 20th, Sherry writes Randy a letter. 3 days later, on October 23rd, Randy writes her a lengthy letter in response, telling her the circumstances. And on November the 13th, now this is less than a month after she wrote her first letter, here's the letter that Sherry Salmonson wrote to my student Randy on November the 13th, 1986. It says, Randy Fry. It says, Dear Mr. Randy, upon a review of your case, the St. Joseph County Department of Social Services has determined that we will not be proceeding with our investigation. Did you get that? Listen again. It says, upon a review of your case, the St. Joseph County Department of Social Services has determined that we will not be proceeding with our investigation. Sincerely, Sherry Salmonson. What is the change? What's the difference here? The state of Michigan has a duty to educate every child that belongs to the state of Michigan. The state of Michigan does not have a duty, nor will they educate your child. The state of Michigan will educate their children. They will not educate your child. That makes all the sense in the world, doesn't it? I mean, you know, I'm a Gordon, and I have to educate all the Gordon children. Now, if I give my child to the state, then it's the state's child. And when you got that birth certificate, you gave your child to the state. And so they simply look there and they say, oh, this child doesn't have a birth certificate. Gosh, that child's not our kid. Now let me demonstrate this one more time. Another student. We called him Slick. He's a general contractor out in Virginia. Well, he got tired of general contracting out in Virginia and he moved out to Kansas. He lived in Coffeyville, Kansas. Remember that famous city, Coffeyville, where Jesse James rode into town and robbed the bank? Well, he lived in that county. I forgot what the name of the county was. And he had attended my school. And after having graduated from school, he decided to take his child, who was about 6 years old or so, and educate her at home. And so they did for the first and second grade, the child's 6, 7 years old, they educated the child at home. Joe called me one day on the phone, and he said, now this child, remember, doesn't have a birth certificate, and Joe does not have a marriage license. He's in Coffeyville, Kansas, and he's educating his child at home. Everything's going fine. There's no problems there. The school board, of course, wrote him a letter, and they said, your kid needs to be in public school. And he wrote him a letter and said, no, my child doesn't have to be in public school, and we're educating her at home, and thank you very much, and if there's a change, we'll let you know. So things go on for a couple of years. Now, the reason that these public schools want your child in that school is because every child enrolled in a public school is worth $56 a day. $56 a day for 180 days a year. How much is that? 56 times 180 days is $10,080. $10,000. Now, the national average is, last time I saw, about $7,000 per child in public school. $56 a day. Now, the federal government ponies up some of the money, the state government ponies up some of the money, and your local district ponies up some of the money, and you've got a kid in this local district. If you send your kid to public school, they put her on the rolls, and the state sends their money, and the Fed sends their money, and your local school district over here is getting some $56 a day, and that pays for the school teacher and the principal and administration. And, you know, if you got two kids in your school, you know, you get $20,000 a year, and if you got 100 kids and so on up the line, it's money. That's what it boils down to. It's money. Nobody gives a rat's, you know what, as to whether your kid learns anything or knows anything. What they're concerned about is the money. It's the teachers' union, the school board. So this goes on for a couple of years, and one day Mrs. Slick decides that she doesn't want to educate this kid at home. She's tired of homeschooling this kid. Kid now is going into the third grade. Slick called me on the phone. He says, "Hey, my wife doesn't want to educate this kid. Do you think I can send my child to public school?" And I said, "No, I don't think so. The state has no duty to educate your child. They only have a duty to educate the state of Kansas children. Your child doesn't have a birth certificate. You don't have a marriage license. Your child's vaccination record isn't up to date. And, you know, you just got to face reality. It's your kid. It's your duty. It's your responsibility. And you got to educate her." And he said, "But I pay property taxes here." He said, "I got 40 acres here. And I'm paying property taxes, and over the last 2 years, I have been paying the school tax. And very plainly, on my property tax, it says, this is how much you're paying for the school, and I'm paying that tax. Now, it's unjust enrichment for the state and the county, the school district, to be taxing me and taking my money and then not giving me anything for it." And I said, "Well, welcome to the club. I'm a taxpayer, and I have to pay a property tax, and I don't have any children in the public school, and I got to pay that tax. Of course, in my case, I don't want to send my kid to the public school. And I didn't challenge the state's taxing me and unjust enrichment." But he said, "You know, I'm going to go challenge them. I think that the state has to educate my kid. And I think they have to educate my kid without a birth certificate and without vaccinations, without a marriage license, without title or ownership to the child, simply because they're forcing me to pay for that education. Unjust enrichment." And I said, "Well, Slick, you know, that's the stuff of constitutional confrontation. That's the stuff that makes for constitutional test cases. Why don't you run with it and see where it goes?" So one day Slick goes down to the local school and he says, "Well, here's my little girl. She's 8 years old and we want to enroll her." And the first thing they say, "Okay, where's her birth certificate?" He says, "We don't have one." And, of course, they said, "Well, you got to have a birth certificate or you can't enroll your child in public school." And Slick said, No, I don't think that's true. You see, I'm a Hebrew and I practice Hebrew law, and we don't pass our children through the fire to Moloch. And because we practice the law of Moses, you've got a religious discriminatory policy, and we're going to challenge that." Okay. "Well, where's her shot record?" He says, "Well, we're Hebrews and we don't believe in vaccinations. And so we're going to apply the First Amendment exclusion in Kansas. And if you don't like that, we'll litigate that also." And they came back and they said, "Let's see, you don't have a birth certificate. Okay. Give us your child's records. Show us her academic performance." And Slick said, "We don't have any records or academic performance. And the state of Kansas doesn't require it. She's 8 years old. We want to enroll her in the third grade. You test her, and let's see whether or not she can qualify for the third grade. Let's see if she can spell her name and count to 10. So they said, no, we're not going to do that. So Slick went into the school board. He talked to the principal. Then he went into the school board and he said, listen, it looks like to me that we got a constitutional test case here. Here's my position. So he stood up in front of the school board and he said, my position is that you have a discriminatory policy against a suspect classification of persons called Hebrews and that it's religious in nature, and I'm going to sue the school board and I want monetary damages as well as injunctive relief. Enroll my child in the public school, put her into the third grade, and she's not going to have a birth certificate, and she's going to have no shot record, and she's not going to have any shots. I'm a taxpayer. You took the money. Now deliver the goods. Well, the school board turned it over to their legal department. The legal department looked at it, and they agreed with Slick and said, enroll the child. Now, from my perspective as a law school instructor, I think that if the case had gone to litigation, the United States Supreme Court would have ruled against Slick and said, the state of Kansas has no duty to educate your child. The state of Kansas only has a duty to educate Kansas children. But it never went to litigation. The school board, the school district, blinked. They gave up and quit without a fight. Now, there's the story. That's the way the game is played. Sometimes you win and there's no fight. Sometimes there's a knockdown, drag-out brawl, and you lose. But when you do it pro se, it doesn't cost anything. Now, in the case of both of these students, what does it cost to walk in and tell the school board, here's where the bodies are buried, boys and girls, and here's where the rubber meets the road? You don't have to pay thousands of dollars to a lawyer to walk in and represent yourself. You have a constitutional right under the Sixth Amendment to do that. If you can walk, talk, and chew gum, you can walk in and talk to anybody, including the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, and do it pro se. All right, we got to give you a couple of reminders here, and we'll be back with more here on this subject matter of parents patre, the parent-child relationship, when we come back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on my website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log, schedule, and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Remember, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just go to the website, georgegordon.org, and send an email or call direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967, or go to the webpage, georgegordon.org, and click on to the email. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, or call the Law School direct at area code 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right. Let me tell you another story here that comes out of the, see if I can identify the newspaper here. I believe I can. Schools Threaten Families. Let's see if that's not the one I'm looking for. back here before Randy. There was a neat citation came out of a newspaper down in Florida. Let me see if I've got it. John Gatto's citations here. Well, I don't seem to have it right here in front of me, but they said in effect, you know, that the state of Florida is talking about educating Florida's children in Florida's school. And I thought it was right on point to identify Florida's children and Florida's schools. Now, I may have that over here in this other section here on divorce. Let me put this book over here on this side of the desk. I want to tell you a little story here about the doctrine of parens patriae. It's called On the Doctrine of Parens Patriae, the Fiduciary Obligations and State Power. It's written by Jeffrey Blustein. It's B-L-U-S-T-E-I-N. Jeffrey Blustein. And he starts off, he says in this paper, I shall explore the philosophical foundations of the venerable but little discussed doctrine of parens patriae. More specifically, I'm interested in the way in which the doctrine conceives of the three-way relationship among the child, the parent, and the state, and in the scope of the state control over parent-child relations that the doctrine may be taken to justify. Who shall argue that while society has a legitimate interest in the upbringing of its children, the doctrine's central underlying thesis that parents are merely the agents of the society in the area of child rearing. And this rests on untenable principles of political morality and has implications that are profoundly anti-liberal. At the same time, it is important to note that the doctrine of parens patriae represents a particular conception of parenthood as a fiduciary or trust-like relationship, and that the application of the fiduciary concept to parenthood may provide the rudiments of an acceptable theory of parenthood, even though this particular conception ultimately turns out to be indefensible. And it's for this reason that I shall divide my discussion into two parts, beginning with an examination of what can and cannot be attributed to fiduciary relationships as such, and then moving on to consider the specific claim that parents are granted fiduciary powers over their children by the state. Now, I'd like to begin the conversation by asking you, what business does the state have in your family to start with? Well, historically and traditionally in the United States of America, beginning with our Constitution in 1787, the answer is none, zero, zilch, nada. The doctrine of parens patriae comes from feudalism, and it comes from Anglo-Saxon administration of a feudal tenure and title, not a lodial tenure and title. Parens patriae has been around for a long time. It says that when the king owns the parents, the king owns the children. And it has its origin in 1 Samuel chapter 8. 1 Samuel chapter 8. So when we go to 1 Samuel chapter 8, we find that, and I'll let you read it for yourself. I won't bore you to tears here by reading the Bible to you. I don't want to offend you, honest to God. I just want to point your nose in the right direction. 1 Samuel, you'll find that here at the beginning of the Bible. You have 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, and 1 and 2 Chronicles. But here in the first verse of 1 Samuel 8, it says, "And it came to pass when Samuel was old that he made his sons judges over Israel. And the name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second Abiah. And they were judges in Beersheba." Well, the people came to Samuel and they said, "Hey, Sammy, we want a king like all the nations around us." Now, Samuel was the chief judge in the nation of Israel. God was the lawmaker. We practiced the law of Moses. We didn't need a legislature. And we needed an executive, and so our executive was Samuel, who holds or did hold the power of the president of the United States. He was the chief executive officer, the head of the Levitical priesthood, the head of the civil service. And the people said, "We want a king like all the nations around us." We are not satisfied with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We are not satisfied with God's laws or God's rulership over us. We think God is a dolt. He doesn't have letters after his name. He's never been to college. We don't think he's very smart. We want paid professionals to rule over us. We want people with PhDs, doctorates, and at least a college degree. And God doesn't have any of those requisites. So God weighed in on the subject matter here in verse 7. He said, "The Eternal said to Samuel, hearken to the voice of the people in all that they say unto you, for they have not rejected you, Samuel, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them." We are the only people in the world, ladies and gentlemen, in Anglo-Saxon administration to give the finger to our God and tell him to kiss off and get out. You will not find the Buddhists doing that to Buddha. You do not find the Mohammedans doing that to Allah. You don't find the Confucianists doing that to Confucius. You don't find the Taoists or anybody in the world giving the finger to their gods. They worship the sun. They worship the moon. They worship Jupiter and Apollo and Bibel and a whole host and plethora of gods. Show me one instance in the history of the world where anybody, any people, any nation ever gave the finger to their God except the Anglo-Saxons. Now that's the way it is. And you can read it for yourself, as they say down at the Blue Room, as they're dealing the cards. Read them and weep, boys and girls. So, in verse 8, he went on and said, "According to all of the works which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even unto this day, wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so they do also unto you. Now therefore hearken unto their voice, howbeit yet proclaim solemnly unto them," or protest solemnly, "and show them the manner of the king that shall reign over them." So he described George Bush. He described George Bush and the Patriot Act and Homeland Security right to a T. Read it for yourself. And then he came up with a real corker, as old Russell Harvey used to tell me. God, that's a corker. In verse 17, he said, "And he'll take the tenth of your sheep, and you shall be his servants. And by golly, social lady has made you the servant of the state. And you serve the school board. You serve the principal. You serve school marm. You serve social lady." And then in verse 18 he said, "And you shall cry out in that day because of your king, which you shall have chosen you, and the Eternal will not hear you in that day." So when I hear people call me and they cry out and they pray to Jesus to give them relief from social lady, and I remind them, "Well, you know, you made your bed, partner. Now you gotta go sleep in it. When you sign that birth certificate, boys and girls, and you pass your seed through the fire to Moloch and you give your child to the state of Kansas, when you give your child to the state of California, when you sign that marriage license application and you make this contract with Baal, you know, you're making your bed." And then they cry out and they say, "I didn't know." Okay, well listen, boys and girls, ignorance is a choice. Stupidity, ignorance, foolishness, nonsense, insanity. Those are choices that people make. And I will agree with you, those are pretty poor choices. And I feel sorry for those people that make those bad choices. But, you know, after all, that's a choice that you make. It's a choice that you have to make, whether you like it or not. Nobody asked you. It's a choice that you have to make. So you may make your choice based upon ignorance, but nevertheless it's a choice, and that choice has ramifications. It has conclusions. It has an ultimate end to it. Whether it's economic, should I put my money in the bank? Should I deal in gold and silver or Federal Reserve notes? Should I buy stocks and bonds? You know, should I stockpile food or should I rely on Albertsons and Walmart? You know, those are choices that you have to make, and you make them, and you make them every day, whether you like it or not. So this is a choice, and God said, you know, back here, well, heck, this is about 1100 BC, so we're talking about, you know, 2100 years ago. He said, you'll cry out to me in that day of the mistakes that you've made, and people will call the law school and they'll say, oh, I didn't know. How do I get my children back? And, oh, I just don't know. You know, well, let me tell you. You know, your child's gone. At least those children that you gave away are gone. You don't have to give any more away. You could stop giving your children to the state. You could rescind your marriage license. You could divorce the state. You can recover. You can make more meaningful and more intelligent choices. But you're never going to correct the choices that you've made in the past. When you give your money to the Salvation Army, you can't come back 10 years later and say, oh my God, I'm sorry I gave my money to the Salvation Army. Give it back. You know, once you gave it, it's gone, and that's the end of it. And the Salvation Army will spend your money the way they think it ought to be spent. And then if you don't like it, you don't have to give them any more, but you can't get the money that you gave to them in the past away. That's the way life is. So let's wake up, smell the coffee, you know, look at the roses, and let's understand this is the way the game is played. Now, what do we do to recover? What do you do to recover? The first thing you got to understand is what in the hell caused this problem to start with, and how do I stop making these mistakes in the future? So Jeffrey Blumstein, it's B-L-U-S, it's Bluestein, or Bluestein, or however you pronounce it, Jeffrey, B-L-U-S-T-E-I-N, tells us a little part of the story here on the doctrine of parens patres. So listen up, read them and weep, as they say. The origin of the doctrine of parens patres and the law can be traced to medieval and late medieval English chancery courts, where it played an important role in maintaining the structure of feudalism. Chancery, as an agent of the monarchy, had a duty to assure the orderly transfer of feudal duties from one generation to another, and to ensure that there would be someone available to perform these duties. And the concept of parens patres was usually invoked in connection with problems of property or guardianship. Government does the same thing today. In order for the government and the major multinational corporations to ensure a workforce that is amenable to paying taxes and supporting the institutions of government and corporate America, they have reintroduced feudalism in America. Now, we used to practice allodial tenure and title. We have abandoned allodial tenure and title and gone back to feudal tenure and title. I don't know why you people wanted feudal tenure and title in place of allodiums, but you did. You made the change, and that's where you're at on the chessboard. The queen and both rooks are gone. Gone. And now we're playing the chess game with a handicap. No queen, no rooks. Game's not over. There's still a game to play. But you got this handicap, so let's just face the handicap and say, okay, well now what do we do? Now in some of the colonial statutes, we can see the beginnings of the idea that children are to be protected not only from poverty, but also from parents who are undeserving. And Lord Redesdale maintained that parents have rights to their children only as a privilege granted by the state, and that the state delegates control over children to their parents as a trust, and that it does so because parents usually discharge this trust faithfully on behalf of their children. And the right of parental control is a natural, but not an unalienable one. Now, your right as a parent to control your child, it's a natural right. It comes from God. It comes from the law of Moses. But it's not unalienable. The king can record it. And the king can enforce it because we said, that is, our ancient forefathers, 1100 BC, said, we want a king like all the nation around us. We want feudalism. we had the creator of the universe as our king. And then we said, to hell with that noise. We want a king like George Bush. We want Bill Clinton. We want Franklin D. Roosevelt. We don't want Jesus Christ of Nazareth or Melchizedek or the Father, the creator of the universe as our king. We want Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, and George Bush. And we got them. I didn't make it that way, boys and girls. I'm just a reporter. I'm just here telling you. That's what you chose. That's what you got. And the God of heaven said, when you cry out to me, I won't hear you. So I was telling my students when they come in here and they sit down and they cry and tears streaming down their face, I say, hey, listen. You don't need to pray to Jesus. He already told you, I ain't hearing this crap. You can read that in 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 18. He said, I will not hear you in that day. Now, if you want to pray to Jesus, get after it. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. I'm just telling you what he told you. He said, I ain't hearing it. Now, you gave me the finger and I butted out. Now, live with it. My old granny used to say, sweetheart, you made your bed. Now go sleep in it. It's the way the game's played. But there's more. In the trust referred to by Lord Redesdale, the settlor, or creator of the trust, is the state. And the trustee is presumably the child's natural parents. And the beneficiary of the trust, it's called a sesticui trust, is the minor child. So you traded the property right in the child, ownership over the child, the fifth commandment, honor your father and mother. You traded that for it takes a village, and the tenth plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for free education for all children in public school. I mean, it's your choice. It was your call. You made the choice and you called it when you got the birth certificate and the marriage license. You just ratified what your forefathers said back here in 1 Samuel chapter 8. We want a king like all the nations around us. And everybody has the choice. And everybody goes out and makes that choice. Okay, well, there it is. Now, the fiduciary relationship does not rule out the satisfaction of interests that parents have as individuals. Now, you do have some interests that need to be upheld. You know, as a babysitter, you do have certain interests, and you need to capitalize on your babysitter interests. Now that your property right is gone, then all you have left is your equitable interest in the child. All right, so let's make the most of a bad deal. But they may not criticize these standards on the grounds that the parents are a specific child's parents and that the parents know what is best for their own child and that they believe some other goals are more appropriate in their child's particular case. Since the theory of parens patriae regards parental authority over children as derived from the state, parents have no right simply as parents to define their own standards of child rearing and to demand that the state confine its requirements to minimal standards of care and education. So, if you're a parent, don't think for a moment that your rights as a parent over your child trump or supersede those of the state. You know, you need to know your place. You need to know your place in the pecking order. You need to know when it's time to hoe cotton and shut your mouth. Now, when your master speaks, you say, yes, amassa. Yes, amassa. Do you get that? When the state speaks, it's yes, amassa. When social lady comes, it's yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And don't give her fits and starts now. Now, it's true, you've got certain rights, privileges, and immunities, but they're not absolute. They're conditioned. So you need to apply your rights when social lady comes in. If you've got rights, apply them. If you've got privileges, then request them. Now keep in mind now that the state might adopt minimal standards or maximum standards, but parental rights are merely creatures of the state, and individual parents have no independent source of authority on the basis of which to challenge the judgment of the state as regards the proper direction for parenting. When Social Lady says this is where it's at and this is where the rubber meets the road, it's yes ma'am. Now, oftentimes, Social Lady goes beyond the pale. She makes demands or she makes claims that are way beyond the scope of the law. And when Social Lady makes demands that go beyond the scope of the law, she ought to be challenged. No, I don't have to do that. The law doesn't require it. Here's what the law requires, and here's what we're going to do. So when the state says to me, you take your kid over there and have your kid tested at the Lutie school, I just say, yes, sir, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I'll have my child there. Yes, ma'am. It's the state's child. You know, when the state comes to me and they say, hey, you got to educate your kid in public school, I come back and say, no, Miss Social Lady, that's not true. I do not have to educate my child in public school. I have three choices, and I've exercised my choice. Knowing where these lines are drawn in the sand, boys and girls, is very, very important to you. And 90% of the problems that people have when they come here to the law school is that they haven't got a clue. And state agents and state agencies are making demands that are patently illegal, patently unconstitutional, and patently wrong. But at the same time, they make claims that are true, accurate, and correct. And then they mix the true, accurate, and correct demands with those that are patently false, mix them up together, hand them to these parents, and say, here. And these parents haven't got a clue as to what they could do next to protect themselves. So if you want to learn how to do that, we teach school here, and we teach Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife how to deal with Social Lady and Probation Man and Juvenile Judge and Family Court Man or Family Court Lady, whichever happens to be the judge in the family court. There isn't any judicial circumstance that you can't handle yourself. You have a Sixth Amendment constitutional right to represent yourself in court. You can walk in there, it doesn't cost you a dime. As long as you can walk, talk, and chew gum and say your piece and do your legal research and say, well, this is what the law is, judge, now enforce the law. The judge will enforce the law. The legislature makes the law. The judge enforces the law. Social Lady oftentimes goes beyond what the legislature has provided. I'll show you a little bit more of that as we progress along. We're about out of time. I'm going to have to cut it off right here. Remember, we're talking about the doctrine of parens patriae, it's parent-child relationships. And under the doctrine of parens patriae, you have a contract with the state. You have a contract with the devil. You have a contract with Baal. Then you have to maintain that contract, whether you like it or not. And if you get uppity with your master, give him the finger, he'll take your kid and put him in a foster home, and that'll be the end of the argument. So there's limits. You know, you don't want to breach those limits or go beyond the line drawn in the sand. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure that you get your copy. It's a 4-hour story, a 4-hour introduction to the law school. It tells you what we do and what we don't do, what you can expect, what you can't expect. You can order it. Just call the law school, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Remember, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. Hey, we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Thanks for listening, and until next time, good night, friends.